for you, what was the biggest difference for Ramirez in the seventh and the eighth inning?
Yeah, I mean, he was, that's all we had pretty much. It was him, it was down to him and Lopi. We have five guys down today out of the pen. So going into the game, we knew it was going to be Sevy for as long as we could ride him. And then it was a combination of Digman, Ramirez, Lopez, because like I said, everybody else was down today.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 7th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Also on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Happy Sunday, I come to you just about an hour after the Mets defeated the Reds 3-1, 2 out of 3 in Cincinnati. The road trip goes on to Atlanta. Now it gets real, gets a little bit tougher. First test of the year. See how the Mets match up with the best of the best. But after the horrific 0-5 start, and I had a chance to obviously go on the newsletter throughout the week and give my commentaries on the offense and maybe some of the reasons why the offense is struggling, obviously on Twitter and Instagram, giving my opinions about the fans, getting myself in a little hot water there. And I had a chance, if you haven't checked it out, you know, you don't have to pay for the newsletter, you could just subscribe for free for updates. I was on with Anthony Rivera, Subway to Shea. Also put it out there on Twitter if you follow me on Twitter or Instagram and whatnot. Talking Mets No G. Just want to give you everything that you need to know to get with this show in between the Sunday show. So that's what it's all about. But after the 0-5 start, things stabilizing a little bit thanks to a big ninth inning. Brett Beatty and Pete Alonso, the heroes on Thursday. And then today we'll get into the blueprint. The blueprint of success for the 2024 Mets, the way it was built as I see it, the way that David Stearns built it, and where it can go wrong because of how tight to the vest the Mets are. So we'll talk about that. We'll get into the starting pitching epidemic. A lot was talked about on the broadcast today. You'll hear a clip from Ron Darling and Gary Cohen. Jim Bowden over at SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio talked about it. I know Dr. James Andrews, renowned orthopedic surgeon, chimed in about it. We've been blowing the whistle about it here on this show since spring training, so this is really not new news. We'll talk about that and how that's going to impact the Mets, how it's going to impact, I believe, how teams have to be built going forward, and also how the league is going to have to address this. And it's not just about the pitch clock, so I'll get into that. And then finally, and I know we've been talking about this ad nauseum, and I know it gets me in trouble, the fans v. the Mets, fans v. Mike Silva, the fans, and how I feel about how they behave at times, whether it be on social media or at the ballpark and so on and so forth. But I think something happened to Francisco Lindor over the weekend. Well, actually, Lindor's wife. And I think it's important to address where we're at, because I believe we're at a very important inflection point between the fans and the team. And I think the fans are going to be a barrier to success unless the loud majority takes the wheel away from the toxic minority of fans that I think are driving the train right now. So we'll talk about that on the way out and try to put a positive dialogue onto what is a touchy subject. I know I get a lot of polarizing feedback on both ends of the aisle on this when it comes to talking about the fans. But let's kick off with the blueprint. So I told you during the spring, as there were many detractors who believe, well, this is not a great Mets team. They don't have Scherzer. They don't have DeGrom. They don't have Verlander. They didn't sign Yamamoto. They didn't do enough this offseason. I mean, look, one of the names that was attached to the Mets as a possible trade target, Shane Bieber, which if you had read some of my breakdowns on the newsletter and talked about on the show, that was a guy that, unless it was a salary dump and you wanted to put money on the line was a Tommy John risk, and sure enough, he's out there. So as you start to see the performances of those who were signed over the winter for some very lucrative contracts in this current baseball economy, they're not as good as you think, and they're not all that much different than maybe some of the pieces the Mets have brought in. But I said, if this team is going to be successful, they have to run this out with a very specific blueprint. And it's a blueprint that's tight to the vest, and it's on the margins, and it requires a lot of the inside baseball insight to understand its success. And it's going to probably, like it did on Friday and like it did today, cause you some heart palpitations and agita, because it's not a blueprint that is a bully blueprint, which allows you to have the cigar out there or the rocking chair, or, you know, in the seventh inning, you're going to be sitting back drinking a beer, drinking a water, eating your dinner, and just enjoying a good conversation while you watch the last few innings because it's a blowout. That's not the way the Mets blueprint works. That's not the way this team is built. So you've heard it before, but I'll repeat it. The blueprint, and you saw it on Friday, and you saw it today. It requires 5 to 6 innings of 2 to 3 runs from your starting pitching. It's essential. You can't get behind 3-4-5-0 with this crew. They're not that kind of offense that could put pressure. They're not like the Braves, who came back from a 6-0 deficit against the Diamondbacks yesterday. You're going to probably need at least 9 outs from this bullpen, probably 12. And that's a bit of a problem, and we'll get into that. But you're going to need 6 to 9 quality bullpen outs at least on a nightly basis. You're going to need that elite Diaz. It was a little shaky on Friday. A lot of that was his doing. I know I talked a little bit about it. I threw it out there. He wasn't great last week, his first outing in the cold against Milwaukee when the Mets were behind a run. He's not throwing as hard as vintage Diaz, but it's early and he's been off for a year and he's getting the job done. And I think it goes and ties into what we're going to talk about in the second segment here about pitchers and pitcher injuries. 96 and a nasty slider is plenty. I know it's great to see 100, but the way I saw Diaz today, he looked pretty good, even though he wasn't throwing 100 miles an hour. So you have all those in play, you know, 5 innings, 3 runs, 6 innings, 3 runs, 5 innings, 2 runs. I mean, that's not a dominant performance. That's a solid quality. Well, 5 innings is not a quality start. I'm not even asking for a quality start. I'm like, get us through 5 innings, get the team through 5 innings, 2 to 3 runs, but preferably the low bar of what a quality start, 6 innings, 3 runs. All of these guys, as they develop, as they stretch themselves out, I believe they'll be in that bandwidth, and it's important for them to be in that bandwidth, even though they really haven't consistently been showing that over the first week or so of the season. The blueprint, however, cannot survive the following, and this is where I think the Mets have been built, that these things aren't an issue, but they have been issues at times since the start of the season, which is why they've lost 2/3 of their games to date. The blueprint cannot survive bad defense. You can't have what happened with Tyrone Taylor dropping a fly ball yesterday. I know it was a sun field, but you can't have that. You can't have Omar Narváez throwing the ball into center field, not having his head in the game and not understanding situation, runner, and throwing down to second base and allowing a steal of home. You cannot have Omar Narváez not blocking pitches in the dirt and allowing a strike three to roll back to the screen and add a base runner. You can't have that. You can't have a team that has that kind of bad defense. You can't have it. McNeil making some bad plays in the field. Now, they were a little bit crisper today, but you can't have that, because Stearns, one of the first things he said when he took over back during the GM meetings is he wanted a team that could catch the ball. He liked run prevention. Well, if you look at the advanced metrics, the Mets have not been really good at run prevention, and the eye test has shown inconsistencies in that manner, and this team is not built for bad defense. They're not. If they're not going to play solid defense, and McNeil's been a culprit, and Alonso hasn't been great at times, and Narváez has been bad. I mean, when Brett Beatty, who I have eviscerated, has been the star on the offensive side of the ball, which makes me beyond happy. I know people are throwing things at me, say, oh, well, you were in support of Beatty. I never said I wasn't supportive of Beatty. I just said last year, the guy shows me nothing, literally on both sides of the ball. And to his credit, through the first 9 games, he's shown more life with his bat. He is light years better defensively than he was last year. And he's starting to emerge into a nice piece. I don't know if he's an all-star piece, but a nice piece. I said, give me an Alec Boehm season, and I'll take it. And right now, that's what he's giving you, an Alec Boehm season. That's a conversation we could probably have in more depth as we go along. I'm not sure if we're going to have time today, but we'll have that in more depth. But the blueprint can't survive bad defense. The blueprint cannot survive the starters not going five innings. The bullpen is solid. And I think you take away the Tonkin outings, and I feel bad for Tonkin because he was put into a couple of extra inning situations where the defense failed him in one. And all you're trying to do when you have that ghost runner, which is already putting you behind the eight ball with a highly high percentage probability of that runner scoring, is you're trying to put a lot of strain on how you pitch. You're a little bit finer. You're trying to go for the strikeout more, which is not his game, which ultimately probably put him in a position where it spiraled on him. And I'm not sure we ever really got a chance outside of that first outing where he was okay. I think that might have been on opening day or the second game of the season where he was okay. And I think if he was there to eat some innings, he would have been okay. The Mets deem Julio Teheran and what he can provide in the rotation is more important. I can't disagree, assuming that you're going to get a six-inning, three-run type of Teheran, which he basically was last year in Milwaukee. But the bullpen can't be overworked. The bullpen can't survive right now five-inning starts every night, and they certainly can't survive if you're going to get less than that. It is a death knell for this team. When you have, and this is part of where they've struggled, and some of it's bad luck, it's a death knell for this team. The rainouts, the poor length, the extra innings. It's not a team right now that can survive that because of the starting pitching situation, which, by the way, I think is not just a Mets problem. As we get along with it, as you hear with Spencer Strider and Shane Bieber and Jonathan Loaisiga, I can't remember how to say his name, Loaisiga, is that how you say his name? I always got his name wrong over at the Yankees. He's a reliever. Jared Cole is hurt. I mean, so many big names on the shelf to start the year. Top 10 pitchers in baseball on the shelf, including guys like Kodai Senga with shoulders and elbows and injuries. You know, so I think this is going to be more of an issue across the sport, which this team can't survive. And at some point, your strengths, which is your bullpen and bridge to Diaz, is not going to be a strength, because if you don't get the length, and this happened last year in April when the Mets had that 5+ ERA from their starters when Scherzer was bad and Verlander was bad and McGill was bad, and I mean, just go on. Senga wasn't great that first month, and all of a sudden the bullpen was great, but you burnt them to a crisp by June 1st, and then they weren't so great in the second half. And maybe they weren't as good as everybody thought, because Billy Epler decided to, you know, go with those optional guys, the opposite or antithesis of what David Stearns has done. And away you go. At least in 2022, you would get seven innings from a Bassett. I still think it was a bad move not re-signing Bassett. I know he struggled early on with Toronto, but it was such a bad move. I think he would be so perfect with Senga and these guys in the rotation, especially knowing that you were at the end of the road there. Potentially with Verlander and Scherzer not being able to give you more than a couple of years and whatnot. But it's water under the bridge. Even Carrasco and Walker that year, and if you look at them, they were able to space out their start strategically against some of the weaker teams like Miami. But even a Carrasco and Walker would go and give you into the seventh inning. Mets didn't need much more than 5 to 6 outs. And sometimes they'll need 3 outs to Diaz. And of course, they had the Swiss Army knife there and Trevor Williams, which they really don't have right now. That was, I think, something that they thought Tonkin would be. And it would be, that's something, maybe Julio Teheran becomes that. Because at some point, Senga's going to come back, and then Teheran might be, and I think that's where the strategy of who Teheran is, that sixth starter that could space it out, swing man. Basically, I think they want Teheran to be Trevor Williams. And if that's what he can be, I'm fine with that. You know, I'm not expecting him to be vintage Teheran. It's ironic that he's getting his first start against Atlanta and that offense, that crazy offense out there. They're like the Golden State Warriors of, vintage Steph Curry 2015 Golden State Warriors of MLB. I love these NBA references, I'm sure. I hope you guys get a kick out of it if you're an NBA fan. You know, I got the Dodgers as the 96 Bulls, and I got the Braves offense as the 2015 Golden State Warriors over there, or something along those lines. So, this team can win. This team can compete. This team has a blueprint and has the individuals that can get it done. I'm afraid that the pitching and the starting pitching crisis and where the Mets are with handling their starters, and I would hope that this is just early season out of spring kind of managing innings. Even back in the 80s when I started watching baseball, when you made your first start out of spring training, you weren't going 9 innings. You maybe go 7 innings. You know, I saw Davey Johnson would pull guys after 6 innings or something like that. There was some buildup. Obviously, not all the time. They would go complete games. But there was some thought as you come out of spring of the buildup. And maybe they're doing a component of that now as you watch this. But, I mean, fans have brought up in game one of the doubleheader, Hauser only had 67 pitches. You know, they're going to have to start. And Mendoza, who's had a shaky first week, is going to have to start to look at the analytics and look at the third time around the order for some of these guys and look at some of these guys north of 100 pitches and say, look, we've got a 3-run lead. Can't we get a couple outs? I know that the data, if it was Strat-O-Matic baseball, the data says, hey, take him out and bring in a fresh arm. If we don't get to the point as a sport, the Mets don't get a point where they could push some of these guys to a Severino 110 pitches, a Manaea 110 pitches, a Hauser 100 to 110 pitches. Like everybody on that, in that rotation, maybe you take McGill out of it and maybe Buto because you don't want to, and even that I don't understand. At this point, if these guys are getting hurt, it's clearly not pitch count. You're going to have to start to think about pushing these guys a little bit, ultimately, because 110 to 120 pitches, which normally would get you into the seventh inning and could, and Manaea had a couple innings where he labored and so does Severino. All it takes is one 25-pitch inning, and you're done. And that could happen in an inning where you get a 1-2-3 inning. I think it was, I don't know if it was Spencer Steer or who it was, but he had like an 11-pitch at-bat where he got somebody out. Manaea today, and that happens. The guy fouls off a couple pitches, close pitch now called a strike. It happens. You're going to have to start thinking about stretching these guys, and I wonder if that's in the plan. Now, you may say, well, the analytics says you have to pitch 101 to 120. The batting average goes up. Yeah, guys, guess what? The batting average is going to go up because eventually in the sixth inning, you're not going to have everybody available. You heard in the quote coming in at the beginning of the show, Mendoza from yesterday post game, where they had 5 guys down coming out of the bullpen. I mean, they were waving the white flag yesterday. If Severino got blasted, that game was going to get ugly. You were probably going to see a position player pitch. And I think, you know, people are going to say, well, Johan Ramirez stinks, but he didn't stink in the seventh inning. And I think that you probably want to think twice before you make him pitch against lefties. He's probably a guy that's more effective against the right-handed side of the plate. I wouldn't give up on him. See, that's my concern. You start misusing these guys, and now you designate them for assignment. They get picked up by someone else, and all of a sudden, they're a useful piece. It's about using them right. And he had no choice. If that was who was down, because you got Teheran on Monday starting, so you can't put him in, then, yeah, you had to live with Ramirez the second inning, hope for the best. Now, it was some bad luck, and the defense let him down, but be that as it may, he probably was gassed. So you waved the white flag. What could have been a sweep is 2 out of 3. Today, everything was positioned perfectly. I know everybody gets crazy about Mendoza. I know he's had a spotty first week with the bunting. Instead of bunting with short, bunting with Beatty, instead of putting short up there to bunt, I thought that Beatty bunt was really bad. If you want to bunt, put short up there to bunt, pinch run with somebody else at second base or whatever have you. I really am not completely bothered by his bullpen moves. I know the Aravino in the eighth inning, and he gave up the home run to the lefty. That bothered some people. I think Mendoza is, and remember his background. He comes from the Yankees. He saw the Yankees and Aravino. Especially with Aravino setting up Aroldis Chapman during that 2019 run to what, you know, nearly was a World Series run. And he saw Aravino really as a big part of that bullpen when he was a coach for the Yankees. So there is some affinity. He's seen him at his best. And let's face it, Aravino has done a pretty good job and has some pretty good advanced metrics where, now, if there were 3 lefties up in the inning and a speedster, I might be careful because of his inability to hold people on. You may have to mix and match a little bit. Maybe if it's the middle of the lineup, you switch him and Diaz. Diaz gets the 8th inning. We'll see how that works. I really don't have a problem with that. You know, managing this bullpen is going to be interesting. Right now, it looks like the hierarchy is Lopez comes out and gets like the 6th inning. Raleigh will get the 7th inning. Aravino will get the 8th inning. And then Diaz gets the 9th. And where Diekman falls in is probably more of that, you know, 6th inning guy as well. on the days. You know, they may be doing 18 B team type of situation. And, you know, even Reed Garrett, who, you know, navigated a very important innings. I mean, think if he didn't give you those innings in the second game of the doubleheader, where this bullpen would it be? And you don't have optionable relievers other than Garrett. That's it. So you want to get good relievers, and this is where the sport is really at. You want to get good relievers, they're not going to have options. Good relievers are not optionable for the most part. You have to build your own bullpen from your farm system. That's where you get the optionable arms. But again, is it healthy to option these guys? You get five shots of it, up and down, up and down, up and down. Like, that's not healthy mentally and physically and from their preparation standpoint. So what's the solution? You got to start pushing these starters. Even if it means maybe it's a little bit more dicey that they're going to have a higher chance of giving up a run in the sixth inning, they're still big league pitchers. You know, and obviously in a scoreless game, maybe you want to treat it differently. And against certain teams and certain matchups, you want to treat it differently. But I'm sorry. And I don't want to make a blanket statement that this is where it's going to be all year, because we can't nine games of the season. And Manaea, I think, was at 92 pitches today. In as time goes on, I'm going to keep this, the jury's out. As time goes on, you can't tell me if this was June and they were playing the game today, that he couldn't go to 110 pitches. Give him one more inning, one more. Maybe you have to bring the guy mid-inning. Maybe you had to bring in a Lopez mid-inning. I know that maybe there's some analytics that say he's better without guys on base, but we have to stop. You cannot have a sport, and this is a Mets problem, because they don't have those horses. They don't have the Bassetts and the Scherzers. And, you know, DeGrom at one point was a seven-inning guy. Not anymore. He's not going to be anymore. Or the veterans like a Carrasco or a Walker. That could, you know, they're just going to throw them out there. And they're going to give you length. And I don't think there's any guys coming up. You think Christian Scott or Dom Hamill or Mike Vasil or any of these kids that are down in Syracuse or Binghamton, they're ever going to see the seventh inning anytime soon? Of course not. Unless it's one pitch and out, unless everybody's swinging at the first pitch, which nobody does. I mean, for the last 20 years, the last two decades, since Moneyball and the Red Sox and Red Sox-Yankees and taking pitches and working the count, it has become a situation where the starter is unable, for a variety of reasons, to keep their pitch count at that 100 mark and get themselves much past the fifth inning. Period, end of story. And we'll get into it in the next segment about the velocity of the injuries and all that, but that's the situation. So the blueprint works. You have seen the blueprint work. The problem is there's a thin margin of error. If you build a team on defense and you don't play defense, it don't work. They're not strong enough in other areas. And you can say, oh, they should have got more offense. Sometimes that's not possible. Defense and offense are not always the same thing on a player. You could get a great offensive player who's a butcher at third base. Maybe that's why Vientos is in AAA. So you build it on a combination of offense and defense. And let me tell you about the offense. I mean, the offense has probably, this should have been a blowout today. And this is part of what the Mets' problem was in 2022 when they won 100 games. Today's game, you get a one crooked number hit in the second or the third inning and clear those bases of that base loaded, they win this game 6-7-1. Diaz doesn't see the light of day. And now they can use Diaz tomorrow. But it's a 3-1 game, so you need Diaz. So that's going to be important too. And if you look at the lineup right now, and this is going to be something that we're going to look at, you know that Bader and Tyrone Taylor, they're not going to be great at the bottom of that lineup. They're going to be, if you're lucky, they're league average hitters. And probably Bader significantly below. If Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso are not normal Nimmo, Lindor, Alonso, the Mets have problems. If Alvarez does, I'm not saying Alvarez is going to have a 999 OPS all year, but if Alvarez has to continue to develop into an offensive force, and I think he will, kind of what he was more in the first half of last year than the second half. And Beatty giving you what Alec Bohm, you could live with. And Starling Marte giving you not 2022, but somewhere of an average Starling Marte you can get. But if McNeil is bad, and then you have Taylor Bader, and then you're iffy with some of the other guys not having normal years or having below career average years, which they've had to date, you've got a problem on the offense. Then you can say, well, they're not good enough, Nimmo. They're not good enough, Lindor. Look, guys, look at where they've been historically. Nimmo's an elite run creator, top 20 in baseball. You think all of a sudden he forgot it this year? Lindor is a top 15 player on both sides of the ball, better than Juan Soto in baseball. Go to Fangraphs, look it up. Pete's an elite home run hitter, arguably the best in the game. If they all go off, they all, you know, fall off the reservation, you know, that's some serious cursed bad luck. Then you got to do some kind of cleansing. You got to smudge Citi Field if that's where this is going in 2024. It's too early to tell. So anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Spencer Strider, we don't know what the situation is. He's definitely going to be out. He's going to miss the Mets series. He's got a UCL injury. Shane Bieber out. Tommy John surgery. Dr. James Andrews is sounding the alarm that this is happening now all the way down to when kids are 12, 13 years old. Years ago, we had Jeff Passan on the show. He wrote a book about the arm and about the epidemic that is becoming pitching. This is only getting worse. We touched a little bit on here this first segment. The Mets are tied right into that because with the way that pitchers are going now and with the way that they are unable to stay healthy, it's going to prevent teams from signing big-time pitchers to long-term contracts. You saw how hard it was for Montgomery and Snell to get it. It's going to push teams to maybe have rotations that resemble the Mets. It's going to put more strain on bullpens. It's going to water down the product. And, oh, by the way, the commissioner's talking about expansion in the next 5 years. What the hell is this league going to look like? Is it going to be beer league softball by 2032? God help us. What are we going to talk about on the Talking Mets podcast? A 14-12 game being the norm? Anyway, let's take a quick break. We'll talk about the pitching epidemic right after this.